Hey, this is Greg Grunberg, the mind reading cop from Heroes.
And I'm the sidekick, Adrian Pasta.
And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, Nerd Nation, all you fanboys and fangirls out there, welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Coming to you a wee bit early this week because once again I'm taking Comic Book Central on the road. Yes, another bit of travel plans coming up here. So I wanted to make sure that you had this episode before I left the cozy confines of the lair. Now, this time I'm not going to be going as far. I'm going to be sticking a little bit closer to home. I'm headed to the Cincinnati Comic Expo to celebrate the 30th anniversary of one of my all-time favorite flicks, probably one of yours as well. Back to the Future. It's 2015. We're in the future. Now, for the Cincinnati Comic Expo, co-founders Andrew Satterfield and Matt Bredesteggy, they put on an incredible event in Cincinnati each and every year. You might recall my episodes from last year's event. It was a two-parter starting with episode 44. Matt teased the Back to the Future theme for this year's show. So that's what I've got going on this weekend. The boys are actually going to be putting me to work as well on Friday. At 5:30 at the event, James Tolkien Q&A, Mr. Strickland from Back to the Future. That's going to be going on. I better have some good questions. I hope he doesn't think I'm a slacker during it, although that would be kind of cool if he did. But I'm going to record a bunch of stuff while I'm there. You're going to hear all of it on upcoming episodes of Comic Book Central. In fact, I'm devoting October to Back to the Future themed shows. You're going to hear Bob Gale, the co-creator of the Back to the Future universe, executive producer, screenwriter. He put it all together. He's the one who came up with this. And one of the events that's taking place this weekend in Cincinnati is Back to the Future in concert. So stay tuned to the end of today's show. I'm going to be giving you a behind-the-scenes preview of that event. So you're going to hear a recap later on, but you're going to get a preview to that event at the end of this show, Back to the Future in concert. The websites are CincinnatiComicExpo.com. That's going on September 18th through the 20th, all weekend long. And then CincinnatiPops.org. That's going to be for Back to the Future in concert. That's Saturday night, the 19th. Backstage preview coming up at the end of today's show. The links are also going to be in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. If you are near Cincinnati this weekend, if you're in Cincinnati this weekend, maybe you're going to be there for Oktoberfest. That's going on too. Everything's going on in Cincinnati. Stop by the expo, say hi, catch Back to the Future in concert. This is going to be heavy. Reminder, if you have a favorite moment from year two of Comic Book Central, I want to let you know. You can drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. The second anniversary special of Comic Book Central is coming up November 7th. So anything that you enjoyed from episode 51 on, email that moment to me. I'm going to get all these on that episode on November 7th. Your email will also put you in the running for a very cool giveaway. I'm going to pick one of those emails at random. I'll give you a hint as to what that giveaway is going to be. It is from a galaxy far, far away. That's all I'm going to say for right now. So if you want to shout out that, get those emails in. Speaking of that galaxy far, far away, my guest today, the versatile actor Greg Grunberg, he visited that galaxy far, far away. We're going to find out what he did in that galaxy when Star Wars The Force Awakens premieres December 18th. Now, if you got a chance to hear the last couple of episodes of Comic Book Central, you did hear a wee bit of Greg. He was at Terrificon in Connecticut, the amazing event that's put on by my IndieCast buddy, Mitch Halleck. If you haven't heard those Terrificon episodes yet, don't miss them. So much good stuff there. Mitch and his team knocked it out of the park again this year. So many guests. We got a lot of that on Comic Book Central, you'll hear. So, and if you want to get a head start on next year's show, be sure to go to the website, Terrificon.com. Like him on Facebook, you'll get in the know for next year's show. You'll be ahead of the game. But I digress. Greg Grunberg was there with Adrian Pasdar, his co-star from Heroes. You heard him at the beginning of this episode. He was also my guest on episode 86 of Comic Book Central. They rocked the place with Band from TV. We're going to talk about that today. Greg is coming back for Heroes Reborn September 24th at NBC. We're going to talk about that today. Also, if you're a Heroes fan, Greg's co-star, Zachary Levi, he joined me on the lair in episode 84. So there's a lot of Heroes goodness happening right here on Comic Book Central. I can't wait any longer. Check this out. I'm going to be right back to chat with the very cool and extremely talented Greg Grunberg. actor, musician, writer, producer, philanthropist, entrepreneur, hardcore nerd. Is there anything Greg Grunberg can't do? Throughout the 90s, Greg appeared on television just about everywhere he looked, including appearances on Melrose Place, Murphy Brown, Mike Hammer. But he got his biggest break as Sean Blumberg on the WB smash hit Felicity, a show co-created by Greg's childhood buddy, J.J. Abrams. In fact, you can find Greg popping up in the strangest places in some of J.J.'s notable projects. Did you catch the pilot episode of Lost? Now, speaking of pilots, Greg was the pilot of the doomed Oceanic Airlines Flight 815. And Star Trek fans, that is Greg's voice as James T. Kirk's stepdad yelling at him on the phone. Now, you could see and hear a lot more of Greg, though, on the action spy thriller Alias as Agent Eric Weiss. And of course, Heroes, where he played the mind-reading policeman Matt Parkman. Greg is bringing that character back to Heroes Reborn, premiering September 24th on NBC. And when Greg does have some spare time, you can probably find him raising money for charity with the rock band he created called Band From TV. He takes the stage as drummer with his TV buddies, and he's also been known to belt out a few of those tunes himself. My guest in the lair today, he recently rocked the Mohegan Sun with his fellow musician friends as Band From TV. He is set to return to the world of Heroes with Heroes Reborn this fall on NBC. And in just a few months, you can catch him in a little independent film, something about some kind of wars that take place in the desert. Or I don't know, people are fighting. I don't know what it is. We'll talk about it. Hey, kids, it is TV's Greg Grunberg. Greg.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome to Comic Book Central. Thanks for being here. Man, it feels like we were just talking like a few days. I think it was a few days ago.
I think it was a few days ago. But I, you know, the thing I love is that I'm sort of a fan. Like, you know, Zach's done the show and Adrian's done the show. So you come highly recommended. And
then
we met in person and I was like, come on.
That was cool. And the funny thing is, you are a fan. Like, my wife and I walk in the floor of the – you're, like, in other people's booths and checking out stuff. And like, you as a fan.
What I love is the – I mean, there are certain fans there that are – that take it to another level. Like, there's a guy – there's an artist who he was doing – he was taking art from different, you know, genre films, TV shows – things, comic books, but then he was texturizing them and putting them on a steel, the art was put on steel. It's like that kind of creativity just blows me away. It's taking, you know, sort of that geek culture, which I'm so a part of, and then, you know, taking it and creating something out of it, not just like a script or, you know, fan fiction or anything, but really like thinking, okay, how do I manipulate this and use the images that are so ingrained and iconic that, you know, it becomes art and familiar, but not, and it's just awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, there are a lot of really cool things there at Terrificon. One of the coolest things, like right off the, I got to say, my wife and I caught Band From TV. You guys were playing, what was it, The Wolf Den?
Yeah, The Wolf Den and Mohegan Sun. So it's, for people who don't know, it's kind of like a mini Red Rocks that they've built. It's all fake, obviously, but it's right in the middle of the casino. So we're playing for a few hundred people, but then we're playing for a few thousand people because it's wide open.
It's right there. Yeah, I was like, where is this thing? And I'm like, you know, it's the first time we'd been there. And I'm going through, you're walking through. Yeah, you walk through the casino area and there's this, you know, this bar and then the stage. And I'm like, it's right open. Everything. People just packed that place.
Yeah.
You guys, and you rocked the house. You and your band. I mean, just, we talked to Adrian about this, about Band From TV. But, you, I mean, you're the drummer.
Yeah.
You're there. So you know, we're looking at, but then you come off like you're shaking your tail feather.
Thank you. Yes.
You're coming out.
Here's what happened. We started this band many, many years ago to help charities. We were tired of walking down the carpet and asking our publicist or a manager or something, what is this? What does this cause? Cancer for what? What is this? This is going to help kids? Where? What? You know, you don't want to be. Causes sometimes choose you. Unfortunately, my oldest son has epilepsy, and seizures and epilepsy are a very, very stigmatized condition, and it's nothing cool about it. People don't talk about it. So I started this foundation called talkaboutit.org, and just to get the conversation going, because if we're comfortable talking about seizures, then maybe we're comfortable donating money or volunteering our time or, you know, anyway. There's, you know, 5 million people in this country that are dealing with epilepsy and seizures. So it's a huge condition, and I've been proud to be the kind of face of it as a caregiver. And my son's doing great. And, you know, most of the people that have epilepsy, they're on medication. They're doing fine. You'd never know. I guarantee you, people listening right now, there's somebody close to them in their life that has had a seizure
hopefully we'll never have another one, but or they have a friend or somebody who is dealing with epilepsy. So it's a very common thing, yet no one is really standing up because it's a difficult to talk about thing. Anyway, in the spirit of that, I'm like, okay, how do I raise money for this? And you know, putting on an event that costs $100,000 to put on and you raise $120,000 and you all hate each other at the end of it is not my idea of fun. And it's wasteful. It's one night of just gluttonous drinking and fun and partying, whatever. And you raise 20 grand, it's not really worth it. So I was asked to play at the House of Blues, and I was playing with Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead and a few other people. And the press, and then by the way, Chicago was playing that night, and there were a bunch of other huge bands. And the press, they were so interested in me and a couple other actors being able to, you know, or being willing to get up on stage and fall flat on our faces in the name of raising money for charity. And I thought, there's something here. Cut to an episode of House that I did. I met Hugh Laurie and Jesse Spencer. Then I met James Denton. He asked me to do a reading at a charity thing. Then I met, you know, Scott Grimes, and Bob Guinea was one of the original founders, Adrian Pasdar, and there's so many, the list goes on and on, but that's the core band basically. And we got together and we played, and then the response was tremendous, and people started, and you can testify to this, we're a decent band. I mean, we really take it seriously.
Yeah, here's the thing. My wife and I are going, I'm explaining to her what this is, because she listens to all my shows. I think she's the only one, but she does listen to Comic Book Central. And I was like, okay, she heard Adrian talking about, I'm like, okay, it's all the TV actors. They get together. So we go in, we're like, okay, I'm sure they're good, but you think, you know, they're actors. That's what they do during the day. They get paid lots of money to be actors.
Right.
They're not typically musicians. They're not going on a summer tour or anything like that. So we get in there. Man, you guys blew the roof off it.
Oh, thank you.
It was amazing. She just turned to me the whole time. She's like, I mean, Scott Grimes is doing Oh, Darlin' by the Beatles. Yeah. You said Jesse Spencer, Devil Went Down to Georgia. He's crushing on the fiddle. I mean, you're shaking your tail feather. You're bringing people up from the audience. Adrian's, you know, it's unbelievable. You guys are fantastic.
Thank you. I mean, we sell it. You know, we're actors. You do. We sell it pretty hard. And that goes a long way. But James Denton and Jesse Spencer and, you know, Hugh Laurie used to be with us. He's got his own band traveling the world right now. But we always have guests. I mean, we pull people up. Terry Hatcher, Michael Chiklis, Zach Levi, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Wayne Brady, people have come up and joined us for various events. And then we charge a tremendous amount of money because all of it, outside of like, you know, paying for a rehearsal space and some beer, goes to the charities we support. And so it's been really the most rewarding thing that I could possibly have ever done in my career. And, it's just great. It's a great thing. It's a great outlet for us. We get to pretend to be rock stars. Everybody has a good time. Like you say, we bring people on stage. We have fun. So I encourage any, you know, big corporations or you know, we don't really sell tickets because we don't have albums or anything. So we have one thing called Hogging All the Covers. That's on Amazon. People can buy it. It's a live album. You can actually see what we do. Yeah. But outside of that, it's, you know, we play corporate events and they send the money to charity. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a very cool event. And even the venue too, a terrific con at Mohegan Sun. I mean, get to hang out, and you guys are coming out afterward and you're hanging out with fans. And
I got to tell you, Mitch.
We saw Jesse Spencer in a restaurant. It's just crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this guy, Mitch, puts it on and he is awesome. I mean, he's just a really good guy. He really cares. I mean, everybody's walking around. You really get to spend time. I mean, it's growing very quickly, I have to say. I think next year might be double. You know, it keeps doubling in size, so who knows? But
I was going to say, I think Band from TV at Mohegan Sun needs to be an annual event. You guys need to play Terrificon.
That's what we're working on.
That's what we need to hear. That's what we
But what I want to do is I want to have a Terrificon party so that people can pay $10, $20, whatever, to get into the party. That money goes specifically to charity, you know, and then we rock the house, and not during the time that we take away from everybody else, you know, walking around during the day. It's a nightly thing. Maybe we play one of the cosplay parties or something. It would be awesome.
Oh, very cool. That would be very cool. So no, it's an amazing thing. If you get a chance to see him, check it out. We'll talk about the websites, you know, as we wrap things up, but, you talk about, close friends, all your close friends in the band. You talk about close friends. J.J. Abrams not in the band.
No.
But he is a close friend of yours. How far do you guys go back? This is crazy.
Well, he's probably a better musician than any of us in the band, by the way. He has written the theme to every one of his shows. Not that Lost is much of a theme, because it's bong. That's the theme. One note. That's it. But he wrote all the other songs. I mean, the Felicity theme. He just loves it. He's so talented. I've known JJ since we were 4 years old. It goes back to elementary school, and I've just been fortunate enough to be, and this is forgetting anything in show business, and I say this all the time, but I really mean it. He is just the best person anybody could have in their life. He's just a great person, great guy. He's like my brother, and in that way, I can beg and plead to embarrassing levels to be in these movies because he's so freaking talented.
Are you begging him or is he asking you? Be honest.
It's a little both now, okay. But it's mainly me begging, I got to tell you. I mean,
which one did you beg the hardest for?
The hardest begging was definitely Felicity because we're both coming up. He's on a rocket. He and Matt Reeves are creating this TV show that revolves around kids in college. They write the most amazing script. I am coming up. I'm doing commercials. I'm guest starring on things. I'm just trying to break into the business. And you really need to have the perfect role at the perfect time. So I say to these guys, listen, I'm not letting this opportunity go by. You must put me on the show. And he's like, what are you talking about? You're too old. You're not in college. You're way over college. Not going to happen. And I'm like, okay, let's come up with a character. So I keep pestering them. And eventually they gave in and they were like, all right, well, what if these kids are living, you know, in a loft space with an older guy, you know, whatever. So I became part of that. And then I just guest starred at the beginning, and then which inevitably happens because he knows me so well and Matt knew me so well. Obviously, we're old friends. They started writing to more to Greg than to Sean Blumberg, but it then developed into this character that people, you know, responded to. And, you know, inevitably on a drama, you need to write to the ancillary characters. You need levity. And that's kind of what I provide, what I love to do on these shows. And then because of JJ, he'll never admit it. But really, you know, he put me on Alias after that.
I was going to say, it's kind of the same, similar with Alias too, right? You're coming in and it's such a, you know, heavily dramatic show and the action and you know, Jennifer Garner's going crazy. And then you come in and there's a lot of light moments with your character.
Yeah, Carl Lumley, Ron Rifkin's the bad guy, Michael Vartan, Jennifer Garner run through the scene with guns, you know, ablazing, and I run through with a calzone. You know, it's like that. That's the kind of thing that I love to do. I mean, look at Big Ass Spider. Here's a movie that I starred in that I produced, and they brought me in. I produced it just in because I was starring in the movie, and we improv so much. But I brought Lombardo Boyard into that movie. If you haven't seen Big Ass Spider, do yourself a favor and see the movie. It's in the sort of the vein of Sharknado, but I consider it more of a crafted. I don't want to say better, but just it is better. But
it's got, yeah. It's, I mean, well, like yours, you know, Mike, take ownership. Yeah,
yeah. Mike Mendez, the director.
It's kind of like King Kong meets a giant spider.
Yeah, exactly.
And meets a sci-fi kind of Sharknado thing meets the Exterminators, and you know, it's just like
yeah, it's got the fun of Sharknado. But it really does track as a movie. Ray Wise is in it, and Lombardo Boyer, like I say, Claire Kramer. I mean, there's some really great people in the movie, and I'm very proud of it. But that's the kind of thing where I don't want to take anything too seriously. Having said that, though, I'm back on Heroes now, and I'm playing, you know, Matt Parkman character. Matt, my character went kind of dark at the end, and we saw where his father was. And where this power of mind reading, mind manipulation can take you if you let it overcome your good nature or your instincts to do good. And I definitely delve into the dark right now. And I'm doing things on the show right now that I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm doing. I mean, I'm talking to the writers and they're enjoying writing to this character because he's redeeming. But so you know, you're like, wait a minute, there's got to be some reason why he's doing these awful things. And I don't want to give away too much, but it's
– No, but isn't that always the case that you see – I mean, those are some of the best characters is that they have these motivations. They do things. You're like, oh, my. And then you realize their – I mean, you think about The Flash and Tom Cavanaugh's character, and you're just like, oh, those are horrible, evil, but I really like you. And look at I really want to hang out with you. Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing. I'm at the Star Wars panel at Comic-Con. Adam Driver put it best. He was like, you know, someone said, so you're the bad guy. How do you like playing the bad guy? And he was like, he is so – that guy, I love Adam Driver. I love everybody in that cast. I mean, they really put a great cast together. But I was in the audience watching, you know, and I look over – and he looks over to JJ and he goes – when we started, he said something like this. I'm butchering it, but he said, you know, when we start first talking about the character, there is no good or bad. It's in his mind, he is doing the righteous thing. And it's true. Like, people that do bad, they think they're doing the right thing for what they need, as evil as it is. And so that's, it's, you know, it's not quite that with Parkman, but it's in the name of, which is always ultimately what Matt Parkman wants, which is just his family to be safe.
Yeah.
Ultimately, in the name of that, he's willing to push come to shove, you know, use his powers to the highest bidder, no matter how evil they are. And it's insane. I mean, honestly, they're using this quote that I said, which is, you know, that this is heroes on steroids. And it really is. What's interesting to me is when Heroes first came on, it was groundbreaking in that you were delving into much more of the characters in a sci-fi superhero kind of show than which the comic books used to. But in converting them into TV and film, it would be wham, bam, wham, bam. You know, it was all just this gratuitous kind of – not all, but a lot of it was. And the character stuff, turns out, you see from Spider-Man and the way Tobey Maguire played it's really, we want to connect with these people. We want to relate to them. We want to think there's a possibility I might wake up tomorrow and be able to read minds. And, you know, we all have, that's all, we all want to be, strive to be that, you know, that kind of superhero thing in our dreams or whatever. And Tim Kring, who created Heroes, talks about how he was influenced by The Incredibles. How it was just a family. And yet they all had powers, and they all, even though it was, you know, it was animated, it's that.
Well, no, I mean, it's an amazing film. And I think that you hit the nail on the head, is that that's what draws us in as viewers. When we can connect to the characters, and when we care about the characters, you can do whatever you want to them.
Yeah.
And then we'll go along for the ride. If you're worried about just the craziness and then think about characters afterward, you'll lose us.
And I think that's true with anything. I think it's true with comedy as well. I've been dying to do a sitcom, and the networks have given me a couple chances. I've done pilots where I've been the lead in a sitcom, and they haven't picked them up. But, you know, I did it where one of them was so funny. I mean, hilarious from beginning to end. And then but you didn't get a chance to sit with the family in the pilot. So there wasn't a dinner. There wasn't a breakfast. You didn't get to know. It was just like wham, 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 wham. Father, son, father, daughter, father. It was like, what?
Yeah.
And the truth is, unless you know who you're on that train with, you just want to get to where you want to go and get off the train. You have no interest in spending a long time. And that, like you just said, you know, if you want to take this journey, you got to know who you're sitting next to.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem when you think of a show like Firefly, where they shot that pilot and you're introduced to all the characters, but not a lot of crazy stuff's going on yet. Yeah. And Fox was like, no, we can't use that as the pilot. We got to use the train one, where the train robbery, where all the crazy stuff's going. Well, I don't know who those characters are.
Yeah.
And it just threw everything off, and it you know, pardon the pun, it derailed, I mean, at that point.
Yeah, but by the way, look at what you name a bigger cult following than Firefly. There is none.
Because we knew the characters. We got to – once you saw that, we loved those characters.
Yeah, and we want to see more of them.
Yeah,
and
just Fox just mishandled it. But, you know, hey, you mentioned Carl Lumley. I want to dive into the world of Heroes here in Matt Parkman, but I got to back up 1 second. You mentioned Carl Lumley. I asked him on this show about a year ago, any rumblings, you know, any chance of a return to Alias? He said nothing at the time, but look, you're often sitting in a room with J.J. Abrams. let's be honest. Does he ever just say, like, I'd love to go back to this a little bit, or is it just forget about it?
I have never heard anything, but, you know, we've all remained friends. And so, you know, when I see Jen or Vartan or, you know, any of the people on the show, you know, that were on the show, originally, Kevin Weissman and I are still friends. I mean, I'm friendly with everybody. I don't see them as often because some live in New York or whatever. But every time I'm like, man, that was such a special cast.
Yeah.
She brought – I mean, Jen set – and it's always the number one on the show that sets the bar and sets the table for how we're all going to behave. But they were all such professionals. I learned more on that show than probably anything I've ever done, But it was such a pleasure, and I think there's room for so much more. I don't know how you would bring that back. I guess you could easily do it. I don't know. I just feel like she's a huge movie star now. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. But I just feel like, yes, that's something that, you know, the characters are out there. It's like Heroes. Like, I never thought we were coming back. I thought this is such, unfortunately, you know, a poor business decision by NBC. They have such a cult following. Yes, maybe for some, the story or the characters got off the rails a little bit, but that's all right. You can get back on, no problem. And that's what I think, getting back to Heroes a little bit, I think it's perfect what's going on. Because, like I said before, I wanted to get to the point of, back then, there was nothing like it on TV. We have now spawned and opened the door, I think, in a way. And the door was opened by other things, other shows as well. But we were influential in opening the door to these types of genre TV shows. And now we see how unbelievable they can do, and the following. But now you've got multi-generational audience potentially. Same way with Star Wars. I mean, the Star Wars is going to be the biggest thing ever because they've introduced – Disney's done a great job of getting kids – you know, just as fired up as an old fart like me. I'm in the movie and I cannot wait to see the movie. Yeah. I have a small part in the movie, but I'm like, I can't wait. It's so, like, to me, I feel like that same kid who was with my buddy JJ, who, you know, he went and saw it before I even saw it. And then we went back and waited in line and saw it together. I mean, I remember it opened at the Avco in Westwood. I remember being really young, my brother and I, my sister. I mean, it was like those days, I'll never forget that energy and that excitement of sitting in a theater and all of a sudden, you know, bang! I can't wait for that moment again, you know.
Was there ever a point, like, when you got on the set with JJ, because he's obviously, you know, putting you through your paces on set. Yeah. Is there a point where breaking the filming, they're setting the lights, they're, you know, the craft services coming in or whatever, and you're just like what is that dialogue of those little kids in your brains? What was that? Just give us like a moment of that.
It was with everybody. That's the thing that was so great. There's that moment that where the behind the scenes trailer that they've got right now where JJ goes, We are on day one of Star Wars Episode 7. How great is that? That's exactly the feeling that holy shit. Can we believe we're here? Kathleen Kennedy, do you know? Look up Kathleen Kennedy. Look up her credits. She's the biggest producer ever. I mean, she has done
everything.
Everything. And yeah. Everything she does.
We do the IndieCast, so we know all the Indiana Jones stuff. And
yeah, everything. And she's brilliant. Yeah. She's just as excited as everyone else. Honestly, to buy this T-shirt at Comic-Con, she bought the Star Wars T-shirt. She's been wearing it. Everyone, I talked to everyone about it. From Boyega to, you know, Oscar is like crazy fan. Oscar had his brother, had his cousins. They were down there. We all had dinner in London, and they were all talking about how, oh no, this and this and this. Like they go deep, like really deep. I consider myself like a bad fan because I'm on the surface. I'll go a couple layers deep. These guys are fanatical about it. And I'm looking at him going, Oscar, you're like the new guy. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. That's what's so exciting is that everybody is giddy about this. And this will never, ever happen in my – like when I was on Heroes – and I did a world tour to promote the show. I went with Mossy. I went with we went around Ali. We did the Asian tour. I mean, when in the world does a show without franchise without selling the rights, you know, for the format rights to do the, you know, the Spanish version of the show or the, you know, the Japanese version of the show, whatever? When does a show really translate all over the world and you know, resonate like it did? 24 that happened. Happened with us, happened with Lost. It's now happening more and more. But we had such a special thing. And I was like, this is once in a career. I'm so content being number 7, 8, 9 on the call sheet. I cannot tell you. It's the best. Because, you know, you watch Seinfeld. Who was your favorite character on Seinfeld? As brilliant as Jerry was.
Kramer.
He's not anybody's favorite. Yeah, Kramer, George. Never the lead. Mm-hmm. He's the straight man. He's the guy sitting in the middle of the circus ring, right. And all the horses are going around. And so you know, I love that being that role. Suddenly I was thrust into one of the leads of this ensemble, but we all had our own little shows going on. We didn't work together. It was cut to me, cut to Mossy, cut to Sendel, cut to Jack, cut to Milo, cut to Adrian. It was like different shows. We all became like the stars of this little thing, and it was unbelievable. Never going to happen again in my career. And now I'm getting a second chance at it. It's crazy, but I'm, you know, they have all these great new characters.
How were you first introduced? Well, you talk about Heroes. How were you first introduced to Tim Kring, the creator, and how, in that world that he built? What was your first? Did you audition? Did they build the character for you? How did that work?
So I was under a deal with NBC, and we were trying to find a comedy. And they would send me scripts, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm the yes man. Like, I find good. When I'm on a project, I'm like, this is the greatest project ever!
You're William Shatner.
Yeah.
Always exactly. Say yes. Yeah.
Yeah, always say yes and get excited about it. And when you're in it, you know, and by the way, William Shatner can carry something and make it great. I mean, he's, you know, but I was like, you know, okay, this is an ensemble. Like, they sent me the script. And no, so I had like 1 day or 2 days left on my deal. And they said, well, we can't find anything. I already done a pilot. And they said, we can't find anything else because we're looking for comedy. I said, no, send me dramas. If you have an interesting drama, send it to me. So they had this script for Heroes. They sent it to me. It does not have the character of Matt Parkman in it at all because it was the first hour of a 2 hour. No one knew it was a 2 hour, only Tim. Outside of JJ, Tim's kind of the king of secrets. Like, he really knows how to keep great secrets to himself. Anyway, he had Jeff Loeb. He had Alan Arkish. He had, Dennis with him. All the, you know, the showrunners. But Tim was at the helm, right? And they send me the script, and it's got a map in it, and it's got, like, all the history. It's like a Bible and a script all in one. And pictures and photos and sketches and things, and there's ants drawn on certain pages where you're like, what? Why is there an ant here? Just an ant. Or a cockroach, I should say. And I'm like, what the hell? Anyway, that is either the sign of a really poorly written script and they have to take your mind off of or energy away from that and try and sell you on other things, or someone that really is passionate and has done their homework and has gone way above and beyond just, you know, the words. And that's the case here. So I was blown away. Blown away. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I am going to be the best Peter Petrelli that anyone has ever seen. I'm like, this is me. So I learned the Peter lines. I go in. Meanwhile, they already had Milo in mind and not locked up yet, but they were working on his deal. They oftentimes do that, but they didn't, you know, it wasn't locked, so I went in. I'm in there, and I noticed that, like, Jeff Loeb is, his mind is thinking about something else. Tim is crawling on the couch, like sitting up Indian style, kind of like, oh my God, like he's got something going on. And I'm thinking either I'm blowing it big time or I don't know what it was. And I was like, okay, guys, thanks. I mean, this was really fun. Oh, Dave Semmel, who's the best, one of the best directors in Hollywood. He was in there and he directed the pilot. And by the way, he's got a new show called Code Black that looks unreal. It's coming on CBS, by the way. But anyway, so Dave's in there. Anyway, I leave, and it's that typical, okay, guys, thanks. And they had me in there a long time, and they were like, God, dude, we love the vulnerability. We love the honesty that you're doing, that you're portraying. You're bringing that to this character. This is, and they're looking at each other but not saying something. I know between them they're thinking something, but they're not saying it. And I'm like, okay. And it's really disconcerting for an actor because you want that immediate reaction. You want to know you did good or bad.
Well, your first thought's probably, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
What did I screw up? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, this is a shame.
Because the actors are insecure. Yeah. They're just
worst. So I leave and I'm driving home and I don't live far. Right away, I get a call. I'm on the freeway. Right away, I get a call. Okay. Good news, bad news. Bad news. They already, you're too old to play Peter. That role, that was just sides for you to read. I was like, oh, okay. Good news. I was like, what's the good news? They have other projects you want to consider me for? Because that's always great, you know, to read for somebody. I'd never read for Tim. Tim had done a bunch of things before. I certainly didn't know Jeff Loeb and what a monster in the business he is and so sweet and generous. Dave Semmel, all these people were new to me. So they said, no. They've already called NBC. They want you to play this role of this cop who can read minds, Matt Parkman. Really, really interesting role. And if you want, NBC has already approved you for the role. I was like, in the last 10 minutes? They're like, yeah, they made a call. Because he saw, he was thinking Crash. He was thinking Matt Dillon. He has the cop, that perfect kind of cop. And I just brought vulnerability to it. I'm a little overweight. I'm everybody's best friend. I'm just much more of a character, not much more of a character, but more of a relatable kind of everyman. And he just said, I want to write to this. So that's the way it went down for me, which is impossible. As much as that seems like, wow, what a series of events. Usually it's, okay, they really want to bring you back. You have to test. Then you test for the studio, then test for the network, then test again. None of that happened because I was under a deal and they just offered it to me. And then I got cut out of the pilot because it was a terrorist storyline that we shot and they didn't want to confuse the audience with superpowers and terrorism. So they cut that out. And instead of it being a terrorism, the terrorist, we reshot the pilot, my scenes, where I walk into the house. If you remember, and if you watch the pilot, this is very true. I lost 30 pounds between the time we shot the pilot and then reshot after the show got picked up, reshot the interior of that house. Wow. So if you watch me from outside.
You were doing another role. You'd gone and done something else and then.
No, not something else. I just was waiting for the show to get picked up.
Okay.
And I was training really, I was training really hard.
Just on your own. Okay.
On my own. Wow. And I need to lose, like right now I definitely need to lose weight again. I'm working on it. That was just right in that time. So when you watch it, you go, wait a minute, there's, that shot. And then as soon as I enter the house, I'm 30 pounds lighter. And you could tell.
I've got to go back and see.
And I find Molly Walker under the stairs. So it's, it was very, very cool. It was, and then it just from there, obviously it was a dream, just a dream. And now I feel like I, I've fallen back into that, you know what's so weird? I'm sorry. I got to say, I have a book coming out, a graphic novel with Scholastic called Dream Jumper. And it's so weird because nightmares and dreams are a resonating theme, and it's something that I've always thought about. And ultimately, I met a guy at Comic-Con, Lucas Turnblum, incredibly successful cartoonist and illustrator and a great storyteller and writer in his own right. And we hit it off, and I didn't mean to change subjects, but it's just like so. It's like I catch myself realizing the brain is so fascinating. Like your brain will take you to places in sleep that you never would ever visit. It's almost like the superhero version of yourself. We're falling, we're flying, we're dreams can take us there, and sometimes they're so vivid. My son had a nightmare. He woke up. And I was reassuring him, cuddling with him, and I was like, "Hey, it's okay." I said, "What is it? Tell me about it. What is?" And he said, "I just dreamt that I was able to jump in and out of my friend's dreams and nightmares and help them through those nightmares." And I was like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, like a dream jumper." And I was like, "Okay, don't go to sleep. Daddy's gonna go get his computer." And I wrote with Lucas. That's all I had, and I pitched it to Lucas. Yeah. And so it's called Dream Jumper Nightmare Escape. It comes out next year at all the book fairs. Scholastic, we're doing a series of three books. But it's amazing how, without even being conscious of it, the mind and all the stuff, the crap and horrible situations we've been through with my son Jake. I mean, he's my hero. He's had brain surgery and he's dealt with terrible seizures. Now, finally, they're under control with his medication. But, I think ultimately – it's like mind, the mind plays a part in everything, but it's really been kind of at the center of a lot of the things that I've been thinking about creatively. And certainly the mind is what I deal with, and other people's minds and control on heroes. And now I've written this book, and it's incredible. It's like, I guess through osmosis and through personal experience, that's how you develop creatively.
Right. And you play that character for so many years too. And I mean, I'm sure some of that rubs off on you of Matt Parkman too. Do you have a favorite moment from the original series? Episode, favorite moment, favorite? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be like on camera, meaning behind camera.
No. Behind camera, my favorite moment was this laugh fest that me and Milo and Adrian had one night. We were in a kind of a, I forgot what episode it was, but we're shooting really, really late, and you just get the giggles and you can't stop, and we just, it was unbelievable. It's like one of those you had to be there moments. But that, to me personally, I love those guys and being on the show, and that was incredible. But I have to say, my favorite episode, and two things. One was working with my father, that character, like dealing with his powers battling my powers and throwing me back into my nightmare, and I threw him into his. That was great. But also Company Man, the Company Man episode, which I think was number 17 of the first season, just ridiculous. I mean, Alan Arkush directing this massive, way too big for TV as far as production value and days of shooting, and the NBC let us do it. And it was, you know, me stuck in the house in a hostage situation with a guy who is going to blow up the whole house and nuclear. He's going to go nuclear, and I have to shoot Claire. And it was a very powerful episode for me. It was a very emotional episode, and that's definitely one of my favorites, if not my favorite moment from the show.
Yeah, a very cool series. And you mentioned coming back, Heroes Reborn. We got the premiere September 24th. Right around the corner here. You're coming in 13 episodes. It's so crazy how they're doing series. Now, you think Daredevil on Netflix and a lot of these, they're not like full series. And I think that may help in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Where you get that bite-sized nugget and you get this full story, this compact story coming in. Have you seen – how much of the series have you seen so far? How much have you shot? Where are we with this?
I come in a few episodes in. And so I haven't seen – no one's seen any full episodes yet because they're still doing the special effects. I'm sure they have the first – I've heard they have the first two, because what happens is new directors come in. So Gideon Rapp, he directed, and he was like, oh, man, the first two episodes are unbelievable. Like, he's going on and on and on. I'm like, okay. Like, he's seen them, because directors have to see what's – preceded them to take the torch and run with it. So
especially something built on a mythology such as it, because it's kind of hard to come in cold when you've got previously on Heroes Report.
exactly. So, but I don't know anybody that has seen, except for the directors, has seen full episodes. I haven't seen anything except for the trailers and a few other scenes that Tim showed me, a few really cool things. But I know about these new characters. Obviously, I'm deeply involved in battling some of them and working with some of them and whatever. It's amazing.
A panel in San Diego Comic Con with some.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ran that panel for 8,000 people, I got to know a little bit about what's going on. But yeah, I mean, I'm just as curious like I was in the first, 4 years. I was just as excited to see how the show comes together, because, there's so many people that play an amazing role in the show, from the music to the special effects, certainly, to, all aspects of how it looks, the color correcting. We're very saturated at times. We're very dark at times. We're, there are certain shots where, like, certain scenes will start visually. Our show is so interesting. It'll start and look like a still or a frame from a comic book, and that's the whole idea. So, it's visually stimulating. There's so many moments. Star Wars was the same thing. Oh my God. This I'll tell you right now, sitting with JJ watching, JJ took pictures, like while he's shooting, he would take, he's just a great photographer. He's very creative, and he'll show me something and I'll be like, oh, there's your poster. And then he'll show me another picture and I'll be, oh, there's the poster. I'm like, there's the poster. I mean, it's Star Wars.
So it's iconic. Yeah, every corner you turn to.
Exactly. And he was just like Greg Beeman. Greg Beeman is a director who is brilliant at this too, and I think this is why directors love our show, is that on Heroes, you're encouraged to be, as a director, the camera is encouraged to be another character or add a really important layer. Comedy is all about not moving the camera, keeping it still, so let the jokes happen. Maybe at the end or the beginning, you can fold into a scene or out of a scene or have actors walking through. Woody Allen has actors walking through and the camera stays still. This is almost the opposite. It's like the movement is exciting and it adds to the energy, then the music, all of it. So to put it all together, I can't wait to see it. And September 24th, we all get a chance to really catch up. And the app, by the way, is the way to go. If you haven't downloaded the Heroes app, it's really well done.
Yeah, this gets us the Dark Matters prequel. It kind of sets a stage a little bit with a couple of the characters, and we see a couple familiar faces.
Yeah, and then it also you can follow any of your any of the characters from the beginning, and follow them over the course of the 88 episodes, whatever that we did, and catches you up. Or you can watch full episodes all the way through on the app, and it's quick. I don't know what engine they're using, but it's very well run. NBC did a good job with the app.
Yeah, I just downloaded it. It's very cool when you're going through and you get to see these prequels. Like I said, you get to that last episode and you're like, oh, what happened? Whoa, there's that guy. I don't want to spoil anything, but
yeah. You know what's great though is the show went off the air, and the last episode was kind of like the best pilot I've ever seen. I mean, for Hayden's character to tell the world, we are out there. We have powers. we're just like you and you know and every we just want to live our lives. Like that's like that just opens up the whole world now. How people deal with you. Are you going to be blamed for things? Are you know in the same way X-Men did? I mean, there's a lot of great storytelling that begins with a moment like that. That so then you take off the 5 years that we've been off the air or whatever, and now you write Dark Matters, which catches you up over the 5 years, and then it just they did it in a very smart way. They had to do it very quickly. NBC announced this at the Super Bowl, like they made a decision apparently 3 days before to do this. So it was like let's just cut to the you know let's show the iconic eclipse and say Heroes coming, you know, the fall of 2015. I mean, it was a shock to all of us. A pleasant surprise, and they've got a video game coming out. They've got, like you said, the Dark Matters digital series. They've got the series. They're really embracing it in a huge way.
They are, and we're looking forward to it. And you know, as we wrap things up here, you talk about things being brought back around again. Everything old is new again. You brought it up. This project that you've worked on with the great Mark Hamill. I'm not talking about your episode of Ultimate Spider-Man where you play Uncle Ben and Mark plays Nightmare.
Right.
The first time you guys worked together.
Yeah, exactly. Together. Oh, we're buddies. We're buddies.
You share an IMDb credit.
Yeah, I've never met the man.
With the fear of Disney lawyers descending upon the Comic Book Central lair, I'm not going to ask you anything specific about Star Wars. You brought it up, but I kind of want to get a general sense of what Star Wars means to you. Just the vibe on the set. And you mentioned, like, you and JJ, they're all of a sudden, like, Harrison Ford walks by. And he's dressed. He's not Harrison. Harrison Ford walking by would be great. Harrison Ford as Han Solo is a whole different thing. So just what does that world mean to you?
I'll sum it up by saying that there was a moment, like, JJ and I were giddy kids on the set. Absolutely, we were ridiculous, giddy. I mean,
Please tell me that's in the – it will be in the DVD, in the Blu-ray extras.
I hope so. I certainly talked about it enough with the B-roll crew. But he and I mean, he especially, he's always in control. I mean, it's a $200 million or whatever it is, you know, budget movie. He's in control like it's an episode of Alias or Lost. I mean, he's – and those are no small shows anyway, but he just – keeps everybody knows that we're all in a great place. Everybody loves working with him. And, you know, we're shooting a scene and he stops. He's like, cut. He comes over to me and he's like, he literally whispers in my ear. He's like, it looks like you're watching the movie. And I said, I was. I'm in the scene with all these great characters. And I'm like, he goes, you're looking at Oscar. Like you're watching him. I'm like, everything's so iconic. Like, I was so excited to be there. So lucky to be a part in any way.
How do you turn that off? How do you turn fanboy Greg Grunberg off?
I don't.
Is that JJ's job?
Yeah, that's JJ's job. Okay. Is to cut away to Carrie Fisher. You know, it's like, that's how you do it. I don't know. I mean, he's the boss. It's like, imagine if somebody said, hey, I want you to come hang out and play on the greatest playground in the world. And I'm really, really, really lucky. And, you know, again, I don't have a huge role, but I'm in the movie. And look, Simon Pegg and I are both in the same situation. He and I talk all the time, and he's like, wait, can you believe it? We're in Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, dude, I cannot believe it. I mean, it's just nuts. It's nuts.
You look good in orange.
Thank you very much. Yeah, those pictures were not supposed to get out, but I'm no, I'm super.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just think you look good in orange. I saw you in an orange shirt the other day, and I just thought it looked pretty cool. Yeah,
that was because I got a DUI. I was on the side of the freeway. No,
the bag.
Exactly. That fighter pilot jumpsuit was very. You know, the picture. It's just classic that things leak when they're trying to. If people don't know what we're talking about, there's a shot from the official. You know, that was me posing for my action figure.
Yeah.
Every single character in a movie like this, no matter how big or small, poses for an action figure. Whether they make one or not, they want to get all the sides and get everything. So I'm standing there taking pictures. Luckily, it wasn't, it didn't look like it came from an iPhone because I was like, what are you talking about? I heard from someone at Disney, like, yeah, there's a picture out there of you from the movie. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's one of those things where I'm trying to keep everything secret. I have a big mouth anyway because I'm so excited about things, but he's my best friend. I would never cross that. Yeah. And sure enough, you know, it just, it happens.
Well, you want to be in episode 8.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody wants to be in episode 8. You're not going to screw anything over for.
No.
Right. I know. It's hilarious the way. A whole different world. I mean, it used to be Starlog magazine, and we get it 3 months later, and now we get it, you know, from the set. So.
You know what? Actually, I'm interested in. I think the toys drop September 1st.
They're right around the corner. As we're recording this, I think we're days away, and I'm just. Oh. I know. So do I fall back into that world again? I know. Do I get to go hang out at midnight and buy all these things again? I don't know.
I know. I just came across Pink Floyd The Wall maquettes. I have set one and set two. I mean, are you kidding? Those were in my attic. They've been in my attic for 12 years. Pink Floyd. I was like, what do I have these for? I'm like, oh, for my kids. Like, they're unopened.
Yeah. You know? There you go. That's why you got them, right?
Yeah.
We moved from Tennessee to Ohio, and I unpacked everything. I'm like, I don't remember buying that. It was just like a party for me. All I was like, woohoo.
Yeah.
I got new toys. I don't remember owning that.
Oh, my God. Lego. At Comic-Con, I met the guys that run the Lego booth, and they were like, oh, come by. So I went by, and they had a whole Star Wars thing, and they gave – the next day, they were giving out this little Star Wars pack. No one – you could only get it at Comic-Con. They're not selling them, and they gave me one. And I was like, oh, because it's Lego. Like, Lego's going to do $1 billion with Star Wars alone, you know?
Right.
And it's one of those things where you covet it. And then another side of me says, what is going on? Like, well, I want to open it up. I want to play with it. I want my kids to play with it. You know, it's tricky in the world of collecting, and we see the value of things. And so it's always best to buy two. I suggest everybody buys at least two of everything.
If you have kids, you have to buy two, because one is to play with and one's to collect. Yeah, one's a kid.
Well, certainly any character that I am involved, you know, any of my action figures, buy two. Matt Parkman action figure from Heroes. If you buy it, people have it. If you have it, it's the only action figure, and I'm not kidding, that comes with a bag of diamonds, a gun, and a little girl. Tell me any action figure that comes with those three things.
None.
Yeah, that's me.
That's unique. And, hey, I'm looking forward to getting my Greg Grunberg Star Wars prison jumpsuit action figure. You can fight You can fight with my Star Trek Negos that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, for Halloween. Is that Kevin Smith? DUI? No, that's Greg Grunberg. That's Greg Grunberg from
the picture. They were so afraid they got out. Hey, Greg. Let's find out. Let's tell our listeners how we can find out more about you. Websites you mentioned: talkaboutit.org.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, first and foremost. It's at Greg Grunberg. And then talkaboutit.org will tell you everything you need to know from all your favorite celebrities, from the cast of Star Trek to Heroes to Felicity to Lost. Like, everybody helped me out.
Oh, they're out there. Zachary Quinto's out there. Kristen Bell's out there. Chris Pine. They're all talking about – you're doing interviews. You're sitting down doing interviews with people.
Yeah, and it just gives you a knowledge. Like Jen Garner, she'll ask a question, and then a doctor will answer the question professionally. So I've it's a Subway theme. I did it with my buddy Ken Loenberg and Phil Gattone from the Epilepsy Foundation, and I'm very proud of that website. And even if you know, hopefully you don't have anybody that you know that has epilepsy or seizures, but just learn what to do if somebody has a seizure. It's very simple. Don't stick anything in anyone's mouth.
That was the first thing I learned right off the bat. Yep.
Yeah, there's some myths out there. So go to the website, talkaboutit.org. Go to bannedfromtv.org, not B-A-N-N-E-D. That's that's later in my career. It's B-A-N-D, banned from TV, rock band, bannedfromtv.org. You can see all about what we're doing and all the causes that we play for. And then I think that's about it. And then Heroes.
It's amazing stuff. Yeah, September 24th, we got Heroes. There's that crazy little Wars movie that you did coming out in a couple of months. We'll hopefully learn a little bit more about that. My goodness, Greg, I got to say, you are one of the coolest actor musicians walking around. I love seeing you rock the house at Terrificon. That was fun. Can't wait for Heroes Reborn. I can't wait for Star Wars. I can't wait to get my Greg Grunberg action figure. I'm looking forward.
Just don't do anything nasty to it.
Okay? Well, you know you'll be hanging out in the Enterprise with the original Star Trek Mego crew up there.
There you go.
Hey, thank you so much for hanging out with me at Terrificon. I appreciate that, and for joining me on the show today.
My pleasure. Anytime. I love your show. Thanks.
Fantastic actor and an amazing guy. I really enjoyed meeting up with Greg at Terrificon. I'm telling you, he was working that crowd with Adrian Pasdar. They had a ton of fun. They looked like kids in a candy store. Greg was going around all the different booths. He was having some fun. It's a fun show. What more can you say? And Greg is a fun guy. Huge thanks to him for joining me today. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Grunberg. Greg's site to raise awareness and educate folks about epilepsy is talkaboutit.org. And you can find out more about Banned from TV and the various charities that they're representing at their website, bannedfromtv.org. And don't forget, Heroes Reborn, September 24th on NBC. Set those DVRs. You can also catch up with the original Heroes if you want to get caught up to speed. It's on Netflix. You've got the app Greg mentioned. That can catch up on Heroes as well. Be sure to check out those interviews with his co-stars, Adrian Pasdar, Zachary Levi, Carl Lumley. He mentioned Carl Lumley from Alias. He was on episode 48. So you can get all those episodes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. They're in the archives. Or subscribe to Comic Book Central on iTunes. You get every episode that way. All right, as promised, your sneak peek behind the scenes of Back to the Future in Concert. I'm going to be there this weekend. If you want to be there, tickets are available at cincinnatipops.org. Now, a real treat for us today. We have got a backstage pass to Back to the Future in Concert with the artistic director of the Cincinnati Pops, Sam Strader, and the man with the baton, the maestro from Marty McFly, conductor Emil Decoux. Gentlemen, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you for taking us backstage of this incredible event. Sam, I'm going to start with you because you were at the start of all of this. How did this rare event, and it is a rare event, how did it make its way to Cincinnati?
Well, the kind of the film in concert phenomenon has started maybe a couple of years ago, as with many things, it often starts at the Hollywood Bowl. And there have been several films that have come out in the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years that have been paired to a, you know, a live performance with a, you know, orchestra score. So films like Star Trek and, of course, Back to the Future, Home Alone, West Side Story. There's been all sorts of films that have come out and are continuing to come out. And so it's a thing that audiences have often really wanted, because we play film music in concert all the time, you know, themes from XYZ film, that, you know, people always were like, well, you know what would be great, to play a whole movie with the orchestral score. And so this is a thing that's been happening more and more. And we recently did, we did Fantasia last year, the Disney classic Fantasia, and this summer we did Star Trek, the 2009 film.
Yes, the J.J. Abrams one that you guys had, right?
Exactly, yes.
What was the fan feedback you got from these? Because these are some big films you're bringing in.
Yeah, people love it. It's so, especially the Star Trek was, it was really, really well received. People just think it's, you know, so exciting. To, you know, these are films that everybody knows. So on one hand, you think, well, yeah, we're just playing a movie in the concert hall. But it's, you know, these are some of the most kind of like exciting and iconic films. And Back to the Future is such a great cult classic. So the audience really gets into it as you know, this new larger than life sort of experience. And so, yeah, everyone really enjoys it. And they're put together so well that it just feels like it really feels like a different experience than just going to the movies.
Yeah, it's so layered. I mean, you go in, you see a movie, but man, when it just, the full orchestra is there, because I've seen these before, and it's just amazing. Now, Emil, I'm looking over your background here. You, my goodness, you've conducted everywhere. I'm from Washington to Washington, and all points in between, all over. Let's see, is it the associate conductor of the National Symphony Orchestra?
I was on the staff of the National Symphony for 11 years. I'm the conductor for the orchestra summer program at Wolf Trap, which is an outdoor venue in National Park in Vienna, Virginia.
Okay.
And I work the rest of the year, mostly in Seattle, as the music director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I have that. So, yeah, from Washington to Washington, you've performed at the Kennedy Center, the Capitol Building. One thing that jumped out at me, you did something with NASA, too.
Yes, I've worked a lot with NASA over the past about eight or nine years as sort of collaborator with different programs. We had in 2006 a program, speaking of Star Trek, with Leonard Nimoy narrating the planets Gustav Holst. That was the very first collaboration. They provided the audio imagery, or video imagery, which was just absolutely stunning. And Sam mentioned Star Trek 2009. We also performed that this past month in August with the National Symphony and the amazing film above. And it's interesting to notice with Back to the Future and with Star Trek, you get very different types of audiences, and they're almost like fan conventions in a way, because people are so dedicated to both films. I'm sure there's crossovers. I'm certainly a crossover audience for Star Wars, Star Trek, and Back to the Future, but it's you get an audience that really knows a ton about the film. They practically memorize the films, and so they know the music, they know the movie, but they know so much background about it as well, so that they're kind of rooting for certain characters and really involved in them in the movie, almost like a audience participation.
Well, yeah, because the music becomes a character almost too, doesn't it?
Oh, very much.
Yeah, the crowd. I noticed in the Star Trek film in particular, the crowd really gets into it when the opening scene in the film,
yeah,
there's this long opening scene that's very exciting, you know, where Kirk's father dies and they, you know, like there's this big pause kind of in the film and the music stops and the crowd goes crazy all of a sudden just because it's like it feels like the you know, like the end of a symphony or something. Just everyone's on their feet kind of. And then at the end of the film, the crowd really gets into it when the credits roll and the composer, in that case Michael Giacchino, it shows up on the screen. It's like, you know, they know why they're there. It's not just to see a movie, but they're there to be part of this musical experience as well as the visual kind of extravaganza.
I think what's really great about these programs as well is that the music is so much more sophisticated than many people give it credit for. Even the old movies like Casablanca or Wizard of Oz, but certainly Back to the Future. And you can only really experience it in this way in a live context, because I study the films with my score and the movie, and even so, the soundtrack gets obliterated just by special effects and dialogue. And you look at what care Alan Silvestri put in just subtle shifts of harmony or bringing a very quiet musical phrase to give some reference to something that's happening in the movie that really strikes your emotions in a way that you're not really always aware of. But you do sense it hearing a great orchestra play it with the film overhead. And another thing is that most people, myself included, experience movies usually like on a laptop or even your phone. And so I watch tons, I travel a lot, and I'm watching tons of movies on my out-of-date iPhone, which is really small. And it struck me watching the rehearsal yesterday, the screen, it's like an IMAX-sized screen that you have above this great symphony orchestra. So you have the best screen projection you could possibly get, two high-definition projectors focused on one frame in the middle, and then this great orchestra. And so you can really... not really experience this classic movie in any other way, than to come.
If you're going to see Back to the Future on the 30th anniversary, this would be the way to do it, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
It's not going to get any better than this.
It's great, too, because Alan Silvestri, for these orchestral programs, he actually wrote like 15 extra minutes of music to go along with the film. So it's actually, you're experiencing the film in a way that you wouldn't have ever experienced it before. And unless you see one of these orchestral things, you won't again.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that, because because we've heard about this, and it's like, well, okay, so we know these movies so well, and we know these scenes, and we know every musical beat. How is this new music brought in? What is the new music, and how is it incorporated into the movie?
Well,
Or can you tell us that?
Oh, sure. Well, the movie had a lot of, Huey Lewis wrote a lot of sort of rock songs or pop songs for the film. And if you know the film, it's called the DeLorean Reveal. When you first see what the Doc Brown shows Marty, the DeLorean in the back of the truck for the first time. And that's a good 15 minutes or so into the movie. And that's the first time you would hear the orchestra play underscoring. And what Alan did for this new version is the whole opening title credits is underscored with new music, and the first meeting of Marty and Doc, and everything up until that point has underscoring just the way the rest of the film does. And he takes music that he already composed 30 years ago, which might have been kind of difficult, and reimagines it and rewrites it so it's more integral to the entire film instead of... I find it almost jarring going between the rock score and Alan's symphonic music. So it had more,
I don't want to say a John Williams feel to it, but it's, I think musically it's more organic to the picture.
Okay, so do we still hear the Huey Lewis songs in it?
You hear Back in Time when Marty wakes up back in 1985.
On the radio.
And on the radio, you hear his audition song.
Okay.
At the high school was written by Huey Lewis, but I think those are the only two.
Power of Love.
Power of Love. Yeah. Well, it was the end credits, and now it is their new end credits written by Alan Silvestri.
Okay, so at the beginning when he said, you know, he realizes he's late for school, and then Huey Lewis kicks in. So that's going to be changed up for us.
Right.
Wow. Okay, so this, we've seen this a million times. We'll get to see it really for the first time.
Yeah, and it was a little daring. I think Alan was had trepidations about rewriting music for this modern classic film, because the interesting thing, we've also performed in Washington, The Wizard of Oz and Casablanca, and like those two films, and like Back to the Future, is they're almost accidental classics in a way. Mm-hmm. All of the various elements came together in almost an accidental, haphazard way, and they became, all three films are absolutely beloved, and Back to the Future, I think, is a modern version of that, because Alan, when he wrote the score, he didn't know that he was writing one of the great film scores of Hollywood history. Certainly, that theme is one of the most memorable themes written in the past 30 years.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, did you get to meet Alan Silvestri and discuss the score with him, or talk to him on the phone or anything like that?
Yeah, it was really exciting for me, because you hardly, in my business, you hardly ever get to meet living composers, because most of them aren't in the classical orchestra world. It was premiered in Lucerne in May, and we did the first U.S. performance, the second performance at Wolf Trap. We rehearsed at the Kennedy Center, and Alan and his wife came to the orchestra rehearsal, and they had never heard the orchestra play before. They'd never been to the Kennedy Center before. So here we're playing this for the first time, and none of us had heard this music played live before.
And no pressure, Alan, right?
I know, and there's Alan and his wife sitting in the center of the Kennedy Center concert hall all by themselves. And so I was a little nervous, of course, because he's this great man, I'm conducting his music, and he turned out to be so helpful and so kind and so nice. And we had the film running during the rehearsal so he could see it, and we hit the very difficult track just like right on, you know, right on time, which was maybe an accident, but I was happy that it happened. And a second later, you hear the applause by one person standing up in the concert hall. And he was just so thrilled. What a kick that would be, is to be a living composer sitting, listening to your own music play pretty well at the Kennedy Center. And
does it get any better than that?
Absolutely not.
It's a really interesting thing. Film composers don't often get to hear their music performed by orchestras in concert. And I've noticed a lot of people that we've talked to, of course, John Williams is maybe the notable exception to that, but just so many composers just really have this awe of symphony orchestras, and the feeling is mutual, you know, and it's kind of a great relationship that film composers have with symphony orchestras that are able to play this music. And, you know, the Cincinnati Pops has recorded so many albums full of Hollywood music, from Alan Silvestri and John Williams to Jerry Goldsmith and Miklos Rocha and, you know, all sorts of people that, you know, in the early days of this kind of activity, where now lots and lots of orchestras play film music, you know, certainly the Boston Pops and Cincinnati Pops and many other major orchestras started playing this playing film music back probably in the 70s. And it became this, you know, this great experience both for the film composer and the orchestras to be able to play this kind of almost new classical music that exists in pop culture.
No, Emil, you mentioned one scene or something. You mentioned like that you hit it right on, and that was the challenge. What was that scene that, and why was it so tricky?
Oh, well, there are two that are very tricky. The first is when Marty punches out Biff and then gets all the. Well, he kind of invents the skateboard in 1955 by taking this little scooter thing and tearing it in two. And it's very tricky because you just have to hit certain things by a half a second time. So when Biff's car crashes into the manure truck, that has to happen within a half a second. And it's very fast and kind of quirky music because it's a sort of a quirky scene. But the hardest one is a very long sequence of about 12 minutes with all the way straight through with Doc on the clock tower and Marty at the DeLorean, and then the DeLorean breaks down and then Doc's almost falling off the clock tower. And what Alan does is he composes this sort of mad scientist quirky music for Doc and the Back to the Future theme when you see Marty in different guises. And the film is quick cut between the two of them because they're both having difficulties doing what they're supposed to do, because if Doc doesn't reattach the cable, then the lightning won't hit and go to the car. And if Marty doesn't get the DeLorean going, nothing happens at all. And so as they're trying to fix their two situations, it cuts back and forth quicker and quicker, but the music cuts as well. And so if you were due, if you're out of sync and you had the wrong music at the wrong time, it wouldn't have the same effect. Not that the audience would necessarily notice, but it wouldn't have the same emotional impact. And my favorite moment, which is really hard to do, but it can be done, is when Marty is frustrated with the DeLorean, he hits his head on the wheel because nothing's happening, and then the car turns on. And right at this 1 second, and it's very hard to pace, but when he presses his tennis shoe on the gas pedal, you get the biggest version of the Back to the Future theme. But that has to happen within a half of a second. And then from there, the lightning hitting the DeLorean and the car disappearing, and to time this, to hit it exactly within a half a second over 11 minutes of music with a live orchestra is tricky.
Yeah, and you don't have the benefit of a film editor taking months to time that out. You've got one shot and that's it. It's kind of like Marty. Yeah. You got one shot or you're not getting Back to the Future. That's it.
Exactly. Otherwise, I'm stuck in 1955.
It's heavy, man.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, how many times have you rehearsed with the orchestra?
Oh, we had a rehearsal yesterday morning, and we'll have a rehearsal the day of the performance for 2.5 hours, and then the performance.
Oh, wow. Okay, now, the question for both of you. How many times have you seen the film before becoming involved with the project? Sam, we'll start with you.
Oh, gosh.
Ballpark.
I don't know. It's probably at least 6 or 8 times.
Okay. Emil?
Not a million times, but definitely definitely a lot.
Not like the rest.
I would watch it if I saw it on television or, you know.
I saw it, the first time I saw it, I was a little kid, and I saw it at the drive-in movies in northern Michigan, where I'm from, and it was out at the drive-in that, you know, when it came out in 85, so I would have been about 6 years old.
That's kind of retro, too.
I know, I was
17, I had the vest, I had the two-tone jean jacket, I had the Walkman, and I had the tennis shoe. I know, it's funny, I watch cosplayers now, and I'm like, oh, that used to be my actual clothing.
Yeah, that.
The funny thing, too, is the movie's set 30 years from back in time from when it was made, and the Back to the Future 2 takes place now, in 2015. And you look at how funny 1955 looked as opposed to 1985, which to us, 1985, when you see the film, it doesn't look all that different. I mean, some of the women's hair, you know, is kind of more 80s looking. But it doesn't look as different as 30 years back from 1985 looks. And, of course, 2015, we don't have Mr. Fusion or flying skateboards.
Yeah.
Right, but you might get the Cubs winning the pennant, so. okay, and Emil, how many times had you seen it leading up to the event, leading up to getting the gig?
Oh, probably 40 times.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you were really familiar with it. Okay, now, since getting...
I watch it without sound. I watch it with sound. I'll connect the entire movie with my laptop with the sound off and just watching. There's technical things I'm watching on the screen the audience can't see. Different colored lines that go across the screen from left to right, and they're called punches, and which they use to synchronize film in Hollywood, where you'll get like a white sort of dot that appears really quickly and disappears in the middle of the screen. So I'm watching that as well as.
Okay, so you've seen it 40 before getting this, or 40 after it?
No, 40 leading up to the performance. I think.
Oh, okay.
Like Sam, I probably saw it 7 or 8 times.
Okay. Oh, so you've watched it like 40 times after you got the gig just to get. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're really from. You're really familiar with it now.
Yeah, I get very intimate with these movies.
Yeah. Well, huge Back to the Future weekend in Cincinnati that's coming up. You got the Cincinnati Comic Expo. You got the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. Several of the cast members are going to be at the expo. Sam, have you been in contact with any of these folks? Any special Back to the Future treats people can expect this weekend, in addition to the incredible event of the film and the orchestra itself?
Yeah, well, we're... obviously the Comic Expo, and we'll have, we actually have a booth at Comic Expo that we've had for a few years now. It's a great way for us to meet people that have a very close affinity to the things we do. So we get to meet lots of folks dressed up as stormtroopers and Doctor Who and all that, which is, it's just an absolute blast. And we have a great location in the expo to be able to meet people. Plus we're always playing music, so it helps people kind of, you know, get in the mood. But so we'll be there. Of course, you mentioned the Enchantment Under the Sea dance from the Geek Prom.
Yep.
And a few of the cast members that are going to be at the expo over the weekend will also may make an appearance at the concert just to say hi, because they obviously love the film. And one cast member in particular, Claudia Wells, who played Jennifer, she was at the premiere, I believe.
Yeah, June 30th at the Hollywood Bowl.
The bowl is where she was at. Yeah, and because she's from LA, and since she's going to be in town, she said she would stop by and say hi. So,
oh, fantastic!
Did you mention the DeLorean? Or
that's true. Yeah, I think good point. We may also have an appearance by the DeLorean on stage. So that'll be fun. There's a great DeLorean club, and we've got some. We've got some connections there that allowed us to Carmen De Leon?
Yeah.
The conductor of the Cincinnati Ballet? He owns the DeLorean.
Oh my God.
And although we're not using his, but there's one that will be here that is, you know, the tricked out time traveling DeLorean. So.
You know, it's amazing because that DeLorean still looks really weird 30 years later.
I know, the stainless steel body.
If you're going to build a time machine, you can do it with some style, right?
That's right. Exactly. That's right. It makes sense. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll have all sorts of, I'm sure, people in their puffy vests and all that sort of thing as well. And also during the weekend, just a quick plug. So Saturday night is the Back to the Future, but on Friday night and Sunday afternoon, we're doing a different program for the opening weekend of the Pops with our conductor, John Morris Russell, that is celebrating the AFI's top 25 film scores. And in addition to that, we have what's called Cincinnati's Favorite Film Score, and we've had a over the course of the summer, we had a Facebook March Madness style bracket poll going on, voting for people from Cincinnati voting for their favorite film score. So we'll be revealing that at the end of the concerts on Friday and Sunday as well.
Oh, film fans rejoice! This is Cincinnati is the place to be this weekend. That is definitely the case. Any favorite scenes in the movie for either of you? Either a scene, acting scene, or musically.
My favorite scene is definitely that scene at the clock tower when Doc is trying to get things, and I love in the sequels when they bring that back and Doc sees Doc or doesn't, you know, he sees his back and all that sort of thing. That's my favorite scene is that kind of really exciting moment towards the end of the film.
Yeah,
I love that thing too. It's a brilliant sort of energetic, exciting moment because you're not sure how it's going to actually turn out. And there's something else I think that's very sweet. You have this sort of tinkly music with celeste and percussion. When anything magical happens with the flux capacitor or something else scientific, at the very end of the film, when Marty's late to save Doc from being shot, and he thinks that he tore up his letter, and you get this very quiet music, and you see it's a very, very sort of tender moment where Marty's just devastated that Doc died a second time because he was too late. And then you hear this tinkling music exactly when Doc opens his eyes. And I think it's just so touching and sweet because that's sort of the heart of the movie is this friendship between the older scientist and the young boy. And it's, the movie has a really good heart, which I think is why people love it after such a long time. I think it's hilarious that the Libyans are driving a Volkswagen van. It's like the least threatened car ever invented against the DeLorean.
Yeah.
88 miles an hour is even possible.
No. Volkswagen van. Well, and I think you, I think you both described two of my favorite scenes too. I love that. It's the play between Doc and Marty, just that relationship. I think no matter what happens otherwise in the film, we care about those characters. So when something happens to them, we are emotionally invested. So amazing.
Bring that up. They're very kind-hearted characters.
Well, Sam, you mentioned a couple of things that are coming up. You've got something else coming up too, right? Another movie event, live orchestra event?
Yeah, so we'll be doing Home Alone in concert on November 28th. It's the Saturday of the Thanksgiving weekend. So, what better time to way to kick off the holiday season is a great, another great, film classic kind of cult film with a fantastic John Williams score. And so we'll be doing that, and that will feature obviously the Cincinnati Pops, and that will be conducted by our associate conductor, Keitaro Harada, and we'll also feature the May Festival Youth Chorus from here in Cincinnati. So lots of great kind of hometown feel to that, a wonderful thing for families to do over Thanksgiving weekend.
And how can fans learn more about the events that are coming up? Website, Facebook, Twitter?
Easiest way is to go to cincinnatipops.org. All the information is there. You can buy tickets there, see the rest of the season, see our counterpart, the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, has a wonderful season ahead as well. So lots to look at there.
And Emil, what do you have coming up after Back to the Future?
I go back to Seattle. We have the opening of our season next week with the Pacific Northwest Ballet, and we have a new Nutcracker production running in November, December, with the choreography by George Balanchine, and conducting another film program in San Antonio, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is another new release of the light. So these films are coming out so quickly. Before, 5-6 years before, they were very rare to have a full-length movie. And now the studios are releasing the E.T. has been released for live performance. So, it's good.
The other podcast I appear on is the IndieCast, where we have been talking about Indiana Jones movies since 2007. So you said the magic words.
I think that's being released in February, and then it will be performed possibly in Washington, D.C. as well. It'll be performed everywhere.
Oh, I think we're going to be talking again. That is absolutely my favorite movie of all time. So
that's a great film.
Oh, okay. Now you got me stoked for that one. So now we can look forward to it. So, all right. I have been looking forward to this event since the day it was announced. I can't wait to see how it all comes together. Gentlemen, I thank you both for joining me today, and I will see you in the future.
Thanks very much. You too.
Thank you.
Take care.
Looks like another road trip for Comic Book Central and the IndieCast as well. Raiders of the Lost Ark coming up. That is going to be amazing. Can't wait to see that and hear that. All right, folks, that is your exclusive preview for Back to the Future in Concert with the Cincinnati Pops. I'm going to be there. You can get a complete wrap-up right here on Comic Book Central in the weeks ahead as I celebrate the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future in a big, big, big way. You can hear those episodes, and you can hear every episode at the website comicbookcentral.net. Give Comic Book Central a like on Facebook. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Follow us on Twitter, comicbookctrl, hashtag share the lair. Email your favorite year two moment to me. Get those in. You can either click the Signal Me tab on the website, or you can drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. All right, that's all the time for today. I've got to hit the road to get to Cincinnati Comic Expo, but I shall return because next week on Comic Book Central, if you thought my Filmation celebration was over, think again. I'm going to return to the world of Filmation with actors Brian Cutler and Joanna Pang. They helped Joanna Cameron fight evil on The Secrets of Isis Saturday mornings in the 70s. Next Saturday, they're going to join me right here in the lair. Until then, have some fun this week. I know I will. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Spiders happen to be my specialty. I become a spider to catch a spider.
But isn't this like the biggest spider ever? You could be super exterminator. So I'm gonna help you, and you know like how? Like Robin helps a bad man.